You're listening to a podcast from 702.
One of the big questions we've been focusing on as a country, rightly so, over the last couple of weeks, it continues to be a dominant story this week and will be in the weeks ahead, is whether our schools should be reopening at this time. Is it possible to save the academic year for our kids and to save lives as well? And that's crucial because children, although as a demographic less affected by COVID-19 than us old farts, nevertheless, they can be vectors that bring it back home. And next thing, wipe out Gogo, which would be massively irresponsible from a public health and public policy point of view. The Minister, Angie Motshekga, has had to grapple with that question. This hour, we grapple with a question that is adjacent to that question. What about post-secondary school? What about the tertiary education sector? There's the same basic question there with different cluster of complexities. Can the academic year be saved and lives also be saved? And that is a question that obviously the minister responsible has to deal with as well as the deputy minister. And joining me to unpack the issues and the complexities that will flow out of them is the Deputy Minister of Higher Education, Science and Innovation, Deputy Minister Buti Manamela. Deputy Minister, good morning to you. Long time. Thank you so much for coming on the Eusebius Mokhaiser Show.
Good morning, Eusebius. It's been a while, and thank you for having me, and also to your listeners.
It's only a pleasure, and it's a very important conversation. You can listen to myself and the Deputy Minister for a while, and then maybe call in, or if you urgently want to call in, you can also engage him directly. He's no stranger to extemporaneous engagement. He's often been the sweep in Parliament, so he knows about thinking on his feet. 011-883-0702. That number is going to be open throughout. 011-883-0702. Alternatively, you can also tweet me what issues I should raise with the Deputy Minister. And you can also tweet me specific questions you'd like me to ask him. Deputy Minister, I'm going to start off with a general question. As I've just framed it, fundamentally, we'd like to have our cake and eat it to complete an academic year, but at the same time, not have an infection rate and a death tally that decimate our population. Can we achieve that in your portfolio?
Well, look, I think this has been at the center of our consideration, both as the ministry and the work that the department has been doing together with the ministerial task team on the post-school education and training response to COVID-19. What we've essentially looked at is what is of primacy is saving lives. And that has been at the top of our agenda. And therefore, when the president declared a lockdown sometime in March, what we then instructed all the universities and TVET colleges to do is firstly to evacuate all students who can get to wherever they can, home preferably, and then mainly international students and also personnel which were responsible for business continuity. You know, there are people who've got to be there to tend for animals that are on campuses, keep the electricity going and all of that. So those are the kind of people that we kept on campus. And then when the levels were introduced, we started discussing what it would mean at different levels for the post-school education and training sector. And of importance was, yes, we need to save lives, but if we can be able to reintroduce and phase in students back into campuses, maybe we should do that. So when level four was announced, we then opened the universities for clinical and medical students. And this was also at the insistence of the Department of Health, precisely because they believe that at some point when this becomes a pandemic, we will need that kind of person. So those have been on campuses for quite some time now, I think since April. And then when level three was introduced in consultation with the Department of Health and our agency Higher Health, we then developed various protocols which universities and TVET colleges will have to follow. We were advised that scientifically, in order for us to manage social distancing in order for us to be able to cope with the demand for personal protection equipment, the demands for, sanitation and all of that. We should, at level three of the lockdown, at least maintain 33% of presence of students on campus. So from on or about the 15th of June, that's what we will be having, at different campuses. As is the case now, there's deep cleaning that is taking place, the sanitation that is taking place in residences, in lecture halls, in workshops, and all of that. Now, what has been confusing is, what did we do to determine the 33%?
Yeah, so exactly.
With TVET colleges, we're going to start with the engineering trimester students who are remaining with 2 weeks of the academic program. So they'll complete that 2 weeks and then sit in for the examination and then go on. And there are various ways, including both on in class and off class, on and off class, academic support, and then we'll then face in the other students, so that they are able to complete their trimester and their annual academic year. With universities, there are various categories. There are already medical students, as I said, and then we'll be getting the final year medical students back on campus and all the other final years. But the final years who can complete their academic programs, off campus, will be encouraged to complete it off campus, and then what we'll then do is we will also have students who will need laboratories and all of that getting back on campus. So there's a COVID-19 response team in each and every campus, which comprises of all the stakeholders, which is going to do some give and take negotiations. But all of that have to take into consideration that our objective is to save lives as the primary thing. We know that a lot of students want to go back to campuses. Some students were saying they're tired of doing washing dishes and all of that. They want to go back and engage with academic work, which is something that excites them the most. But unfortunately, I think it will be irresponsible on our part to encourage universities to open the doors, whereas there is a huge potential, for higher, infection rate, and I think it would be irresponsible for us to allow that kind of a situation. We have engaged with the student leadership. We're in continuous engagement with the trade union, the academics, the vice chancellors, who are at the core of determining the kind of programs that will be rolled out. Now, all those students who will not be able to return to campus have been receiving some support.
Let's come back to them in a second, Deputy Minister, I think that deserves a full ventilation on its own. You have started answering a process question I was going to ask you. Before we get back to the details of the risk-based plan to save the academic year, just from a process point of view, who have you and what structures have you engaged? Is this a top-down risk-based plan for the entire sector, or are the various structures in terms of higher education, South Africa, student bodies, umbrella bodies, the ones from which you yourself flowed in your earlier part of your career into politics? Who has been engaged and what kind of official buy-in is there? Without fear of contradiction, if I were to put people up now, be they VCs, academics, or leadership from SRCs, for example, are they familiar with what you are articulating?
Yes. So what the minister did immediately when we announced the early recess in March, I think it was 22nd of March, he then appointed a task team, which I am chairing, and the task team comprises of the South African Union of Students, the various trade unions. I think there are about three or four trade unions that are represented. There's the University South Africa Forum, which is a forum that represents vice chancellors. We have the various agencies and councils of the department, which includes the qualifications framework, the Council on Higher Education. We also have, we will be, for instance, joined for the first time tomorrow by the Association of Private Providers, which is the association that, represents private higher education. So there's a broad sector that, is represented. And then from time to time, We've also engaged with the student political formations, your Democratic Alliance Students Organization, your EFF Student Command, SASCO, ANC Youth League, Young Communist League, and all of those, in order to keep them abreast and bring them on board in terms of what has been happening. So our engagement has been as extensive as possible. I'm not suggesting that there is universal agreement in terms of what needs to be done. A lot of things, I mean, we had to sit in long meetings and sometimes had to agree to disagree. And, you know, students, for instance, have had concerns around the fact that some students will be left behind. Everybody should stop. We shouldn't have any academic program that is digitally based or anything of the sort. Workers have been worried about, the extent of the readiness of campuses. So there has been consensus, which we've been working with each and every stakeholder to ensure that we resolve, we engage on. But what we have always emphasized is that the plan can only work if engagements and agreements and consensus are reached at a campus level, and then we receive at a higher level the plans from those institutions, and then ensure that those institutions comply, or those plans comply with our risk-based plan.
One difference between you and Minister Blade on the one hand and my NG is that there is a kind of, let's call it, semi-autonomy that universities have that schools don't have to the same extent. So to what extent are you hamstrung but also need to appropriately respect individual universities to make situation-specific decisions relative to their own governance structures and their own judgment calls about safety? Let's say, for example, I'm the VC of a, compared to other campuses, a small campus. Roach University, I guess, quite big, but it's not as big as some as UJ, say. And I might think that, well, I could easily have 40% of my student complement back or 60% back. Is there room for that kind of deviation, or is that number that you tossed out earlier, Deputy Minister, is that a hard number, a universal number?
I fully agree with you that universities have certain levels of autonomy. But there are certain fundamentals which we've agreed that we're not going to deviate from. And some of those fundamentals, the minister is or has actually put in as regulations. I know that there are court processes to challenge some of the regulations. Mm. But I think what is also important to see this is that we have been guided by, as I said, the primacy of saving lives, the guidance we've been receiving from the Department of Health and the Institute for the Control of Diseases, which is a science-based determination on what is needed. So those have been our guidelines. So there are certain things which are a no-no, that we are not going to allow a situation wherein universities want to play around or TVET colleges want to play around with those particular numbers. That includes the 33%. That includes a catch-up program that we insist on. That includes support for students who will not be able to make it on campus. That also includes the kind of categories of students that should return to campus in terms of those priorities.
Okay, I wanted to ask you next about the implementation of even the existing regulations around this in terms of the risk-based plan that the department has announced. A lot of this will depend on stakeholders cooperating, and I wonder how you see that playing out. Some students stay on campus, some will stay in digs, for example. There's a certain extent to which, and I suppose it's intrinsic to how we deal as a species, not just as a country, with COVID-19, that some of this is going to require levels of cooperation and risk-averse behavior from students, academic staff, leadership, support staff as well, as there's a phased-in approach. And I just want you to reflect a little bit on that.
Well, look, I fully agree with you that we will completely rely on the stakeholders. What we've emphasized is that university vice-chancellors, the student leadership, the worker leadership on campus, and university councils are going to be very crucial in how the strategy, the risk-based strategy of facing in students is implemented. And that's why we have spent, together with the minister, endless hours engaging with each and every one of those sectors to ensure that there is, to a greater extent, a buy-in. And as I said, it doesn't necessarily mean that there wouldn't be, either certain sections within the student movement who would then say we do not agree with this or that. But in the bigger picture, I think we all agree and accept that this is the kind of direction that we need to be taking. And I must say that all the stakeholders, particularly those who've been participating in the ministerial task team, have been quite helpful in ensuring that there's a give and take, there are compromises that are made, and compromises which may not necessarily be fundamental to the demands of their sector, but which are important for the entirety of the sector to move beyond. But and then just to also allay the fears of the students who will be returning to campus, and I'm sure some of those who are already there may in fact call in to tell us what their experiences are, so that if there are concerns, we're able to deal with those. So as early as March, we started developing through Higher Health certain protocols which universities and TVET colleges will have to follow. So no campus will be allowed to open unless and until it meets certain standards. And those standards include, personal protection equipment, it includes sanitation, it includes having had deep cleaning of their residences and of their lecture hall. And it also includes plans on how they're going to implement, social distancing, in lecture halls and in laboratories and in whatever learning and residential spaces. So all of those fundamentals have been agreed to. No students will enter campus at any given moment without being screened, and if they're deemed to be compromised, to be tested, and then isolation or quarantine. Institutions are required to have those kind of facilities as soon as they start with learning and teaching on the 15th of June and onwards. So there are those basics which we all agree that they need to be in place in order for us to be able to prevent a further spread of the virus by the reopening of universities. But I think also the other distinction is between higher education and basic education is that we are hoping that we're dealing with young adults who better understands what it means and the implications and the impact of this pandemic. We've had students on campus, for instance, at CPUT, there's been close to 2,000 students who've been there throughout the lockdown. They couldn't go back home, so they had to be accommodated there. And those kind of, small number of students have been somewhat of a trial and error for us in the event that we return, to campus. We're hoping, that by October, we, at the latest, actually, that's part of our, facing scenario planning and all of that, that by October would have returned to normality, to level one, and hopefully the latest we can complete this academic year would be, the worst case scenario would be April 2021.
But there are some really, really important and difficult and awkward complexities about differences in terms of resource disparities between campuses and on campuses between different students. In the second half of the show, this hour at least, I want us to get into some of those complexities. Just before we go to news headlines, when you talk about protocols that need to be in place, for example, requisite amounts of PPEs that need to be on campus, social or physical distancing rather, perhaps in lecture theatres and that kind of thing, is that left out to each post-secondary institution to determine the content of those for themselves, or are you going to give regulations that specify that level of granularity?
Well, we have given them broader guidelines, which are intended to complement the specific guidelines that the Department of Health and the National Disaster Act has stipulated. But we think that our guidelines are elaborate. Of course, We do not go to the extent of the size of the mask or of the, you know, alcohol content of the sanitizer. But we think that that, that kind of information is available, you know, for universities to be able to follow those kind of protocols. But we have an extensive protocol and guideline that was issued to them to follow.
Okay, if you've just tuned in, I'm in conversation with Deputy Minister of Higher Education, Science and Innovation, Buti Manamela. If you want to engage him, I'd love to hear from you. If you're an academic, a lecturer, what are some of your most important concerns? Do you think the academic year can be saved and lives can be saved? What are the practical issues that frustrate you that you'd like him to be aware of? Perhaps he's not aware of them. And if there are aspects of what they have decided that you want to agree with, you can also underscore. You don't only have to call in to disagree with anything that he has said. If you're a student, I really want to listen to what your stories are. How are you feeling about the rest of the academic year? Are you anxious? Many of us cannot afford, even just financially, to restart an academic year. Are you worried about this academic year? And this idea of e-learning, how is it working out for you? Where are you listening from? And maybe the most vulnerable are not even capable of tuning into a radio station like this digitally, depending on where you are. We really want to hear from you for the rest of this hour, and you can directly engage the Deputy Minister of Higher Education. 011-883-0702.
CBS Makaiser on 702 for the curious.
Indeed, 27 minutes before 11. We've got another 20 minutes or so with Deputy Minister of Higher Education, Science and Innovation, Deputy Minister Manamela. Deputy Minister, let's take some questions. I'm particularly keen to have young people, to have students engage you and me on these very important issues. More you, because you've got all the power. Let's go to North Riding. Togozani, good morning.
Good morning, how are you?
I'm good, thanks. You're a VIT student?
Yes, I'm a VIT student.
Okay, tell us how you have been feeling during lockdown and then speak directly to the Deputy Minister. What do you want to ask?
Okay, cool. So basically, at VIT, we've been continuing since the 20th of April till now with our learning. So basically, it's been continuing normally but in an online version. So we're about to finish the semester this week, and we're going to start having exams next week from the 10th. Right. So now I have two questions for the minister. One question is, I'm not a medical student, right? So seeing that basically first semester is gone, and when we come back, should we come back on campus, it's going to be a second semester going forward. So I want to see that our funds be re-looked at. Will we get some form of refunds, because we're not using some of the resources we are paying for at school, and we're also not occupying the residence. Right. That's the first question. The second question quickly is, so seeing that we're going to sit for exams starting from next week, and given the nature of exams, you either pass or fail. So the minister speaks of catch-up programs that each university should institute. So I just want to ask, what form will those take? Will those be for students that have actually failed these June exams we're about to sit in? Or how will that actually work when we come back? Will there be like a third semester? Because as things are going advanced now, the first semester is basically done. When we come back, it's going to be the second semester going forward. So what guys will the catch-up program take, basically? Those are my two questions. Thank you.
Okay, Dr. Zani, thanks for your question. Temba, good morning. How's it, Temba?
Hello, how are you?
Good, thank you.
I'm good, how are you?
We are good, Temba, go ahead.
Good. I'm a landlord in Durban, contracted with BUC, MUT, and UKZN, accommodating over 1,000 students. Now, MUT has come out and made an agreement with us, an arrangement that they are going to pay for March, for May and June. DUT, on the other hand, has come out to say that they are not going to pay us as from March, April, May, and June. Now, UKZN has done the same as well. So our question to the minister, because we've been sending emails to the ministry, we've been trying to engage, because we feel like as landlords, we have an association that houses more than 20,000 students in Durban and in Maritzburg, and we are ignored. We are not taken as part of the team. But we play a very important role in the student education and in the higher education sector. Now, what we're asking is, how are we going to afford to disinfect our buildings? Because we want to be ready for the students to come back. In fact, BUT has come out to say that they are sending some students back to us. Now, our question is, how are we going to afford to disinfect the buildings? That's one. How are we going to afford to pay for Wi-Fi and electricity and water since we haven't been paid for 3 months? Now, come Friday, because some students from BUT are coming back on Friday. Come Friday, it will be a mess in Durban. You will see the CBP students will come back to residences that are not ready. And there is no plan that has been sent by the university or requirement saying that for your building to be COVID ready, you need to have 1, 2, 3 or A, B, and C in place.
Yeah.
There are no measures that have been shared by the university or the higher education. If I go and disinfect and spend 90,000, I just got a quotation for 90,000 to disinfect my building, which is a 4-story building. And if I do that, and then the university comes and says, but you still do not qualify to receive students because we have a guideline, and unfortunately we haven't shared it with you. Durban or KZN is currently not ready to receive students. I'll tell you that for free, because no landlord has been called to say, guys, for you to receive students, you need to have these measures in place.
Mm.
And here's how much we're willing to pay you, because we're not greedy. It's not about the money.
Akatemba, the essence of what you've said, we've heard, my man. If you say it once clearly, as you have done, don't repeat yourself. Deputy Minister, Temba has got some valid concerns, Togozani as well. Shall we take these? And it's interesting because some of them may be beyond scope, but I'm going to let you answer because they speak to the gap between policy intent and reality on the ground.
Exactly. Look, I think, I mean, would really like to get more details from Temba. So I think if we can get his details, and then we'll contact him just to get more details. Because as far as I'm concerned, what we've done is to encourage universities to directly engage with the landlords, but we've also at a national level engaged with the Association of Private Accommodation Providers. We will be getting that report tomorrow in our meeting and make a determination in terms of what needs to happen. But also landlords need to understand that it is not all the students who are coming back to campus. It is only 33% of students who are coming back to campus. So some of them may not necessarily be needed in this current phase of students returning to campus. But then I think the other underlying issue is, what happens now? And it is linked to also Tokozani's issue. Tokozani says, we've not been on campus. Are we going to be refunded? And then Temba says, we are told that we're not going to be paid for 4 months, I think, by DUT or by one of the campuses. Now, this is an important question which we're discussing, as I said, UCBS tomorrow. Our contention is that we have 27 weeks of the academic year that is still outstanding. And that 27 weeks of the academic calendar has to be completed. Students have registered to study in a contact university or predominantly contact university, and to expect students to shift from contact learning into online learning, which is a completely different pedagogy, and has different requirements and all of that. I think it would be unfair, and that's why we've been saying that you can have continuous assessment to determine whether the learning and teaching that's happening, be it online or remote or in whatever form, is actually working. But the final assessment, which will determine whether students progress to the next year or to the next semester or not, that has to be put in abeyance until such time that we're completely satisfied that all students have received a fair opportunity. And that's why we're saying that, all students have to be given an opportunity, as Tokozani is quite concerned. There's a lot of anxiety out there. And what we've agreed with University South Africa is that all students have to be given a fair opportunity. And if some institutions are already going ahead with final examinations, whereas, clearly not all students have been, you know, covered by the kind of mode of learning that they have decided to pursue upon. We think that that would be unfair and would really be asking, you know, some questions to some of those universities. Because we really think that all students have to be given a fair opportunity, you know, for them to be able to...
Okay, we'll take a break here, Deputy Minister. I just want to be clear. For Temba's question, to be fair, you answered him in generalities. For all we know, he is one of the landlords that are needed by agreement. I'm going to put him in touch with your staff. We'll keep tabs on how that one plays out. Let's take a break. On the other side of this, I'll come to you, Margo, Tebogo, and Tabo.
No. Live. Transform. This is 702. This is 702. For the curious.
17 minutes before 11 o'clock. Margo, I'm coming to you in a second. Let me just show some love to Twitter as well. Deputy Minister, here's a question from Twitter via Youth Capital SA. And this is a student from a TVET that asks the following, and it's really pertinent. It goes to what I was flagging at 10:30, which requires you and I to have a separate full radio session on this one. Why are TVET students not taken seriously, asks this student. The student continues, Deputy Minister, how do they expect us to do the e-learning while they didn't provide us with data? The majority of us haven't even received our allowances. Deputy Minister, you know the language of e-learning sounds nice. It sounds very nice to us who've got access to data and stuff, right? And it sounds very modern, it's very now. But if you struggle with data, with laptops, all sorts of things, money to buy airtime, then it's not nice. Then you can be left behind.
Yeah. No, most definitely. I think, firstly, let me just emphasize that, you know, we are going to get most of the TVET college students back on campus because most of them, you know, the intensity of the learning that's required should happen. It's more applied learning than anything else that should happen on campuses. And so that's our objective. And as the minister announced that we've entered into a deal with some of the telecoms, with all the telecoms companies, and through their institutions, both university, deserving university and TVET college students would be receiving data for the next 3 months or so in order to support their off-campus learning. You know, and then I know that there are some concerns with regard to the NSFAS, and I think that, you know, probably at some point we probably need a longer discussion on NSFAS-related issues, especially with the current administrator of the NSFAS. I think it's much more obvious with what the issues are there. You know, I'm a TVET product, you see, because I will never allow a situation wherein TVET students are, you know, undermined. And I think we have fought tooth and nail to make sure that TVET students are placed at the center, you know, in this regard. And then coming to e-learning, like I said, I mean, it's a completely different pedagogy. I mean, you know, there are kids who, when we're saying, look, we'll send out laptops, there are kids who have essentially not seen a laptop, even though they're at university. And then, you know, what do you expect them to do with all of that? And that's why we're saying that, you know, the crisis presents an opportunity for us to do some of the things that we've been slugging on, which is introducing kids to digital platforms, but also ensure that we fill our digital platforms with learning content and also train our academic staff, you know, with these kind of technologies in order to ensure that it becomes the new normal into the future. But as is now, we have to ensure that all the kids come back to university and that we complete the academic year, the 27 weeks calendar that's remaining, you know, so that we shouldn't be unfair to those kids who are in far-flung areas who do not have data, who do not have devices, who do not have connectivity, and yet will be expected to compete with kids who have those.
So how do we reduce that? How do we make sure that digital divide doesn't actually increase inequity within the system?
Well, what we said is that part of the students who should be considered as a priority in the 33% should be those kids who are in far-flung areas. The CSIR has done for us a geospatial mapping of connectivity in the country and availability of facilities. And in those areas where there are no facilities, we encourage universities to consider taking students from those areas back on campus. And then, as I said, that as soon as we fully reconstitute, hopefully under level one, which is what our plan is, we will then have to have catch-up programs, boot camps, and all of that, so that everyone should have been given an equal opportunity for them to then ultimately sit for their final assessment.
Margot, good morning. Thanks for holding on.
Good morning, you see this. Good morning, Deputy Minister.
Morning.
Good morning, Margot.
My point has actually been reinforced by previous callers, and they're young and they know what's needed. But my big concern at the start of this program was, what sort of a workplace are universities preparing students for these days when they are not even exposed to digital learning, online access, etc.? I think it's high time the universities adapted and reviewed and revised, rather than the lecturer going into Eco 101 and spouting the same methodologies that they've been doing for years. And once again, we have this whole COVID revealing the inadequacies of the system at every single level. And I think universities have a lot to answer for if students are going into the workplace without the benefit of strong online access, strong online experience before they hit the workplace. Mm. Workplaces are not there to teach children how to use computers and enter the digital world. This should be done in their training at university. No wonder businesses are loath to hire people without any sort of modern-day access, etc. So that was just my feeling on it, and I hope that this has now opened up a focus on the complete lack of universities to keep up with the fourth industrial revolution.
Thank you, Margot. I think Margot speaks to the opportunity of taking the crisis, converting it into an opportunity, which is not a problem, Deputy Minister, but on behalf of the vulnerable parts of the system, I will reinforce my point, even if I sound like a broken record. I think conceptually, not even conceptually, practically, Margot is right. This is my personal opinion as a citizen. But there would be many institutions ready to make sure that students are fit for a modern workplace if only they had the nuts and bolts with which to work.
Mm. No. I fully agree with you. And I think that the as Margot says, that the crisis also reveals what we have always known, the inequalities within the institutions and also amongst the institutions. And, what has been doing for years, since 1994, has been to try and invest our resources, particularly in historically disadvantaged institutions. And some of them have turned out quite well, to the extent that they can no longer be categorized as disadvantaged institutions. But others are still lagging behind. I mean, if you compare to UWC now to where UWC was 15, 20 years ago, I think that's tremendous progress that has been made. And therefore, we need to pull some of the other universities, into those lines. So one of the things, for instance, that we'll be doing with the minister, which we know, by the way, but the intention would be to try and support those institutions, will be to go and visit them to, still listen to in-depth their plans and look at their readiness and ensure that, turning crisis into opportunities, not only for the moment, but also, to integrate that into the system of higher education.
Thabo, how's it?
Morning, Julius. Morning, Comrade Buti. Two quick ones. Now that there is a potential decline in the throughput rates and research output numbers owing to this pandemic, how will the funding model be adjusted or adapted to this new normal? Because many universities rely on government funding as it relates to throughput rate and research output. The second one is that the heterogeneous nature of the sector, Comrade Buti, makes it difficult to apply a blanket approach in terms of making sure that universities are COVID-19 ready. Is it not advisable to assist universities to have a uniform approach in terms of making campuses COVID-19 ready by funding them to deal with the issue of deep cleaning, sanitization, and all of those things? Because a campus of some University of Technology in the township might not have capacity, and then a campus at Hatfield of University of Pretoria might have a different capacity than the one that is in the township. Yeah. So how are you going to deal with those distinctions in terms of capacities in the sector?
Good questions. Yeah, thanks, Tabo. Let's tackle the first one, the funding model. Are they still going to be indexed against throughput rate and research output, given that this is an anomalous year?
Look, in fact, I think, Tabo's questions are interestingly linked, even though they're dealing with, two different things. The first thing is that we have said to universities, tell us what your plans are in order for you to perform optimally or to perform even better than you have in the last years, and then tell us how much it will cost, given where we are, for you to be able to, achieve that. So not only are we anticipate, so we're not anticipating that there'll be a decline. We're helping them to ensure that there's no decline. So that's the one fact. The other fact is that we have we've got various agencies working with the department to look at different modeling, which will have an impact, obviously, on funding. So in the event that this and that and that happens on account of COVID-19, including reduced number in terms of research and also in terms of throughput rate, what are the things that needs to be done? And I think in time, we should be able to make a determination on that. And then the second thing is the guidelines that I spoke to earlier on Eusebius. Also, with certain institutions, they followed, to be specific, I think 14 universities and all the TVET colleges. So all of those followed resources, as stipulated by what kind of resources they need in order for them to be COVID-19 ready. So that has been done in terms of those institutions that need that kind of capacity and assistance.
But if they don't have the money and the resources, will they get it from you? Are you going to play sugar daddy?
No, we actually already have with some of the universities at TVET colleges.
Okay.
We've readjusted, did some budgetary adjustments and made some reallocation to those institutions to ensure that they are COVID-19 ready.
Okay. Teboho, good morning.
Thanks, Makaiza. Morning, Deputy Minister. I've got one question here, but three related questions thereafter. Is the closing date for the applications for the 2021 academic year cast in stone? Why this question is important? From some of the 2019 matriculants who did not do so well, opted for two options. One, they applied for a remarking of their scripts, and I'm calling here the parent in Gauteng, and those remarked results should have been out in March 2020. COVID-19 has no factor in that. Two, others applied to what we older ones call a supplementary exam, which should have set in June. That has been postponed to November, December 2020. So the implication thereof obviously has an impact in terms of those kids wanting to use those either remarked results or the results that would have come out in June to apply. And what coordination, therefore, would that have?
Mm.
I mean, would that call for between your department and the Department of Basic Education in trying to sort out that problem? I will listen on the radio. Thank you.
Thank you, Teboho. Yeah, interesting questions there. We're so focused rightly on whether this year can be saved. Many parents who don't have kids in the system are thinking about what the implications of this conversation is for closing dates for applications. Deputy Minister?
Yes, I hope I got most of Teboho's question, but I think he was asking whether the applications for 2021 is cast in stone.
Mm.
They're actually not. It's definitely one of the things that we are looking at, both the application for study and the application for NSFAS, because some of the students may not have met the requirements. But I think you need your grade 11 results, but you also need your mid-year results for grade 12 or something like that. But we're also not certain when the 2021 academic year will resume. So all of those factors are important. We're planning at worst for April 2020. We're hoping that by that time, the grade 12 learners would have completed their studies, and also the final year students at university would have also completed their studies and graduated. But those dates are not necessarily cast in stone. So I think universities will be looking at their individual dates and looking at the situations that we're finding ourselves, and on the basis of that, help to determine what needs to be done.
Okay, Deputy Minister, that's all we have time for. So many more people who wanted to engage you. It's both good and bad. Bad because anxieties are high. On the other hand, it means that people are desperately determined to also find solutions and to be part of the stakeholder engagements that you have opened up today. Thank you so much for coming on the program.
Thank you very much. I understand that there's a lot of anxiety, there's a lot of uncertainty in terms of what needs to happen, but our intention is that we save lives, we save the academic year, and we ensure that no student is left behind. And we will make sure that that happens. Thank you very much for having me.
Thank you. That is Deputy Minister Buti Manamela, who, of course, is in charge of higher education, science, and innovation.